Real people, real radio.
Initiating the truth frequency.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for tuning in once again to the radio show. My name is JD. We are live right now. This is, of course, your Red Pill Reports radio broadcast on your very favorite listener-powered network for truth and alternative information, Truth Frequency Radio. You can find us at truthfrequencyradio.com and also on the dial at 90.7. in the beautiful city of Denver, Colorado. Today is, in fact, Thursday, or as I like to call it, Friday evening, and it is also the 23rd day of April. I hope all of you are doing well out there. I really appreciate you guys tuning in for the broadcast this morning. Today is going to be an outstanding show. I can absolutely assure you of that. We have a fantastic guest lined up for the second hour. Before we get into that, though, I have to say, did you guys enjoy the show that we did with Kevin yesterday? I got to tell you, that was the most fun I've ever had on the radio ever in my life. It was absolutely just about as good a time as I think we should be legally allowed to have. And just want to say, if you guys didn't get an opportunity to listen to that show yesterday, go back and definitely check it out, because it was so much fun. Kevin, Marty, those guys do so much work with Johnny over there at KBS. Just cannot speak highly enough about them. Really, really enjoyed Roger Sales' show yesterday after mine. Great, great stuff. I gotta say, I'm becoming a total Truth Frequency Radio addict at this point. I used to not listen to any talk radio at all because I was trying to not be somebody who's absorbing everything else and all the other perspectives out there. It's a way to try and keep, you know, pure if you can. But I gotta be honest, I find myself in the chat room pretty much all day at this point, and I really appreciate you guys joining us in the chat room as well this morning. Already 9 folks in there, some familiar faces, and a couple of new kids today. Really, really exciting to have you guys along for the ride. Appreciate you guys supporting the network and also supporting the show, sharing the webpage at redpillreports.com, and also sharing the show and archives with your friends if you think that they will appreciate the subject matter. Today is going to be awesome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very excited to be welcoming Robbie Holes to the show. Now, Robbie Holes is a very unique individual, ladies and gentlemen. She actually cured herself of some pretty serious diseases after running through the gauntlet of Western medicine. Basically was kind of hung out to dry and then, you know, basically was left to the wind, essentially, and decided to go a different route, and then was able to actually do some things to make a big difference in her life and also her husband's life. So we're going to talk about all those stories in a little while when she comes on the program here in about an hour. So again, Robbie Holes, she's a co-author of a couple of fantastic books. One of them, The Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. Absolutely amazing, guys. It's got a real Journey to Ixalan feel, kind of like a Carlos Castaneda sort of thing. And I really, really, really do enjoy it. So I can't recommend it highly enough. You definitely want to check her out. And if you want to learn more about her, you can go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section. You'll be able to find a link to her website, which is Holes Wellness, HOLZWELLNESS.com, HolesWellness.com, and you can get the books there. They're also exceptionally highly rated on Amazon and Good Books and things like that. So definitely looking forward to having a natural, holistic healer on the show today. I promise, I'm going to open up the phone lines this afternoon so you guys will get an opportunity to call in if you guys have questions or concerns or comments or just want to shoot the breeze. I love stuff like that. So, okay. That's what's going on today. Just as another heads up too, Joel Carson, one of my very favorite people, will be joining the show tomorrow. Are you guys gearing up for garden season right now? I was talking to somebody in the chat room yesterday during a different show that was essentially getting ready to do all of his raised bed gardens, and we were talking about the cost of that and things like that. And I had to say, man, straw bale gardens, that's where it's at. Joel Carson has written an amazing book about straw bale gardens. It's pretty much the definitive book about straw bale gardens. So if you have questions about Straw Bale Gardens, man, I'll tell you, you're not going to be able to, you're not going to find a better source of information than Joel's book. So, looking forward to having that on tomorrow. It's been super cold here in Missouri, so I don't think we're necessarily at a point where you couldn't get your gardens going. So that's why we're doing the show tomorrow. Definitely appreciate you guys being here. Hope you guys are enjoying things so far. Let's get into some international news here right now, because there is a lot of it. This silly planet that we're on, it just keeps on spinning, ladies and gentlemen. So let's hop over internationally. Going to Paris first. A suspected killer has apparently been arrested in Paris. He was accused of planning to carry out an imminent armed attack against churches in Paris, according to the French Interior Ministry. His name is difficult for me to pronounce, but he is a 24-year-old IT student. He's also the suspect in the killing of a female fitness instructor in the city. He was arrested this Sunday. So again, the France's Interior Minister saying that a terrorist attack was apparently foiled on Sunday morning this week. On Sunday morning, when they went to arrest this gentleman at his home, they discovered an arsenal in his car and also in his home, composed of several military weapons consisting of handguns, ammunition, bulletproof vests, and hardware and disposable telephones, according to, again, the Interior Ministry of France. So anyway, the man had come to the attention of security forces after making recent inquiries about traveling to Syria, and he was placed under surveillance, according to Reuters. So he's, again, also suspected in killing a 32-year-old fitness instructor who was found dead in her car, and the DNA was apparently found on his gun at his home, so that's why he's being held with that. But the fact that he had that massive arsenal of weapons, they're going to go ahead and say that he was probably planning some sort of imminent terror attack. Again, we see Paris really clamping down these days on just about anything after the Charlie Hebdo attack. So that's what's going on in your Parisian front this morning. Getting over into the Mediterranean, we've been talking quite a bit about the tragic deaths of many of these immigrants as they're trying to get from Northern Africa, the war-torn area there in Africa, and also in the war-torn areas of the Middle East as they're trying to get basically over into Europe. And there has not been really a very significant response from the EU as of right now. But now the UK military is preparing to offer one of Britain's largest warships to tackle the refugee crisis in the Mediterranean Sea, which, again, has left thousands of migrants dead. About 1,300 just in the last week alone. So the HMS Bulwark, which is a warship, it's a 176-meter launch pad for helicopters and small vessels, could be among the main options offered by the British officials as they try and find a response to this crisis. And the Bulwark would primarily be sent to target people traffickers in Libya. So that's where they believe they need to nip this thing in the butt. They don't really care about the people who are out in the ocean drowning right now, but the main thing that they're trying to do is go figure out who's actually putting them on the boats, these human traffickers, basically. So that's essentially what they're going to do with this, or at least that possibility is on the table right now. Another possibility on the table includes sending naval helicopters to surveil the shorelines and diverting HMS Dauntless, which is a Type 45 destroyer, and it's about to return to the UK after a five-month deployment in the Gulf. Again, the main goal here seems to be more at curtailing the trafficking of the humans in the first place, as opposed to trying to do any kind of rescue once they're actually on a vessel. But again, we kind of have to, kind of remains to be seen what Britain is going to do. Last October, they actually ended their support for search and rescue operations. And only now that all of these tragic drownings are taking place is the pressure beginning to mount again on the European leaders to find a solution. So we'll have to keep an eye on this and figure out if the UK is going to start actually doing something about that. I would imagine that Italy should be on the forefront of doing something also. Okay, moving on to Yemen right now. Man, I'll tell you what, the story about Yemen, we tried to flush it out a little bit with Kev yesterday, and it really has gone just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth over the last 48 hours. There was obviously a ceasefire declared by the Saudi-led forces. They said that they had been successful in eliminating all of the targets that they needed to eliminate, so that Operation Decisive Edge or whatever, they basically called an end to that yesterday or the night before yesterday, because they're, 12, 16 hours ahead of us or whatever. But as of Wednesday, they started airstrikes again, a fresh series of airstrikes against Houthi rebels. And the Houthi rebels are still currently calling for peace talks right now. And the previous round of talks between Houthi rebels and the government of the Yemeni president, Mansour Hadi, had failed in January after rebels attacked the president's personal residence and presidential palace in Sana'a, which is the capital of Yemen. And on Tuesday, Saudi Arabia announced the end of its Operation Decisive Storm. Pardon me, that's what the name of that operation was called, and that was obviously a nearly month-long air campaign against the Houthi positions. And the Saudi-led coalition said a new initiative was now underway, Operation Renewal of Hope, and that obviously has a lot to do with the calling up of the ground forces from the Saudi National Guard. So, but anyway, less than 24 hours after that announcement, and after the rebel forces attacked a Yemeni government military brigade, the airstrikes apparently resumed, according to security forces in Taiz. Five airstrikes targeted a weapons depot in the province late Wednesday, and two Taiz security officials basically said that that is exactly what happened. And explosions lasted for about 40 minutes, so it's unclear right now whether this is a resumption of the operation or a short-term series of strikes. And meanwhile, the Houthis did in fact release the Yemeni defense minister, Mohammed al-Subahi, in Sana'a on Wednesday, according to a senior Saudi source speaking on conditions of anonymity. So anyway, the Houthis had said that they had detained the defense minister at an airbase near the Yemeni port of Aden back on the 26th of March, shortly before the Saudis began their airstrike campaign. And the rebels captured the base that day as part of an advance on the Aden area. And the United Nations right then demanded that al-Subahi's release coincide right there. So anyway, that's what's going on in Yemen right now. We don't know, basically, is what it comes down to. There's still ground troop mobilization happening on the Saudi side. We don't know whether or not they're going to actually go in and try and, you know, put forces on the ground inside of Yemen. Kind of remains to be seen right now. But a statement from the Saudi embassy in Washington outlined the objectives of this new phase of the operation, which includes protecting civilians, enhancing humanitarian and medical assistance, confronting terrorism, and creating an international coalition to provide maritime security, and probably a whole bunch of other really nice sounding things that you say to the people that you just, you know, bombed the hell out of. So anyway, that's what's going on there right now. We're definitely not out of any kind of neck of the woods there in terms of Yemen. And then just to kind of put a little bit of a sprinkle of sugar on just how disgusting this whole situation, it came to light yesterday that a Saudi prince had actually promised free Bentleys to bomber pilots who killed a certain amount of people during this air campaign. So this billionaire Saudi Arabian prince promised to give each of the 100 fighter pilots that took part in Riyadh's latest airstrikes in Yemen a brand new Bentley. This is Prince Alawid bin Talal. He owns one of Saudi Arabia's largest companies called Kingdoms Holdings, and he owns a $300 million stake in Twitter. He made his promise on social media, but he has since deleted the tweet, so not really sure whether or not he's going to fall through with this. But just to put the icing on the cake here, so you could see really just how little these people value the lives of other people, you know, offering Bentleys to people who are blowing other people up. That's just disgusting to me. So I just kind of want to put it out. That's the mindset of the royal family in Saudi Arabia. Again, our largest allies in the Middle East, ladies and gentlemen, not you guys, the BK or UK people, but the us here in the United States and Clintons and all that. Big time tie together with the whole Saudi regime. And also remember, too, they've decapitated more people than ISIS this year, ladies and gentlemen. So anyway, moving on to Russia right now. A number of Russian universities are going to be closed by the end of 2016. This is kind of a startling number. They're going to cut 40% of Russian universities. They're going to close by the end of 2016. And in addition, the number of university branches will be slashed by 80%. In that same period, these institutions are being axed under a federal plan for the development of education between 2016 and 2020. And the Ministry of Education and Science data indicate that at present, there are nearly 600 state and 500 private universities, which have between them about 1,376 branches, respectively. And collectively, the universities cater to 7 million students, of whom 2 million are holding state-funded places at an estimated average cost of about $3,500 per student. So the majority of these cuts will affect private universities that apparently, according to the kids there in Russia, provide a poor standard of education. And this year, quality checks officially started on the 10th of March, and the results will be submitted to the Education Ministry by the 30th of May. And they also said that at present, there were about 100 to 150 good private universities whose further development would be supported by the state. But at the same time, the cuts will affect some state-owned universities as well. So anyway, the government has promised that salaries of the teachers at the national universities will not be cut, despite the complex financial situation and already approved cuts in state funding of universities this year. So again, many, many universities getting ready to close there in Russia. Is that a good thing? Are they kind of clamping down on poor education? I don't know. But interesting stuff for sure. Okay, moving into the Ukraine here right now. Thousands of coal miners from eastern Ukraine have apparently taken to the streets in the capital of Kiev, protesting the closure of coal mines and demanding that salary debts be repaired. The protesters also wanted to talk to the prime minister, but Yatsenyuk ignored the calls, and the rally began in front of the parliament building and the presidential administration on Wednesday, with a group of miners managing to break inside the administration. But the talks with representatives of the authorities brought no results, and the protesters relocated to the government headquarters, blocking traffic at Central Krishtikak Street. Okay, so the miner union said that about 5,000 people took part in this protest. Miners were banging their hard hats on the pavement, chanting, "Shame on you, where is our money?" And they also demanded that the coal industry minister, Vladimir Demchaninsha, man, these guys just have the most difficult names. I apologize, guys. They demanded that the coal industry miner Vladimir Demchaninsha, who recently announced plans to close three unprofitable mines, be removed from his position. So again, another big series of turmoil there going on inside the Ukraine right now, as coal miners are basically getting the axe and they are ticked off about it. So more protests. I don't think this Kiev thing is going as well as we had hoped it was going to be. Okay, let's get into something stupid. We have one kind of silly story from an international front and one that's just going to make you go, what in the, are you serious right now? First one is the what, are you serious right now kind of story coming from Denmark. Big news out of Denmark here. Hopefully this does not affect anybody listening to the program right now, but Denmark did pass legislation earlier this week banning bestiality and also toughening a law that animal rights activists feared was encouraging animal sex tourists to visit the country. I'm sorry. So yes, Denmark, in fact, this week passed a law banning bestiality. And the bill amends a previous ban on intercourse that harms animals, something that Farm Minister Dan Jorgensen argued was difficult to prove. Unbelievable. I don't even know if we have to go on with this. But anyway, the voting for this bill said Denmark did not want to remain the last northern European country where bestiality was legal, as this was obviously attracting animal sex tourists. Germany, Norway, Sweden, and Britain have previously banned it. I'm just going to stop right there. But again, God, and it's 2015. We've got to I didn't realize that there were still places in the world where bestiality was legal, let alone something that would actually drive a tourism market. But apparently Denmark had that problem and they're trying to nip it in the butt. What a world, ladies and gentlemen. So excited to be a part of it all. Here's a good story coming Eastern European region, I guess. I don't know where you want to call it. It's near Croatia. Anyway, okay. This man has now formed a tiny European nation, and 160,000 people have allegedly signed up to become its citizens. So with the advent of modern communication and the means of travel, it seems pretty unlikely that there would be any area of the world left unclaimed by one nation or another. But such land does, in fact, exist within Europe, and one man has just made his claim on it and created a brand new European nation. The man in question is a former Czech citizen. His name is Vít Jedlička, and he is now the president of the Free Republic of Liberland, which is a 7 square kilometer stretch of land on the west bank of the Danube River between Serbia and Croatia. It's actually a disputed land, according to the Serbian and Croatian governments, but neither of them actually currently own it, so it was classified as no man's land. So Lieberman has already put up a website. He's got a flag. He's got a coat of arms. And he has a motto, to live and to let live. And it's also proving very popular. Jedlička and his team of volunteers put out a call for 5,000 people to become part of the new nation. But registrations for those limited citizenships have surpassed 160,000. Now a team of 7 volunteers are slowly sifting through those registrations and attempting to select the best candidates. And the idea of a new nation actually came into existence originally as a political stunt and protest because Jedlička was a member of the Party of Free Citizens in the Czech Republic. But at some point, however, it became real and the support grew to a point where it made sense to go ahead and form in the nation. So as to the reason for its popularity, it's probably down to Jedlička stating that anyone living there won't be oppressed by the government. And it already sounds like a pretty amazing tax haven already. But Liberland, although it is young, is not without its problems. Apparently, the land was already claimed by another new nation called Paraduin, and it's unclear right now how this is all going to be worked out. But the two smallest nations in the world may actually be at war soon over a few kilometers of land that nobody had ever really heard about until, well, pretty much right now. So anyway, if you guys want to go join this man's little nation, Liberland there, you might submit a registration application. I don't know. I kind of like the idea of it, and what a neat story. I just think that's cool. So again, you know, that's one of the things about history, is that it does not exist in a vacuum. We say that all the time, but history is being created. You know, the history of Liberland is in its second week right now. So somebody needs to get on top of that, start writing a book, I guess. Interesting stuff. Okay, let's hop into the national news right here. There's a little bit of story coming out about the IRS. If you guys have tried to call the IRS recently with a question, you probably didn't get through. The IRS estimated that it would only answer about 17 million of the 49 million calls that it received this filing season. Taxpayers lucky enough to have the IRS answer their calls had an average waiting time of 34.4 minutes, which is nearly double the wait time from last year. The IRS commissioner, John Koshinen, has blamed the IRS abysmal customer service on congressional budget cuts. Their funding is down $1.2 billion from its 2010 peak, but apparently now a new congressional report is pointing the finger right back at the IRS. While the congressional funding for the IRS actually remained flat from 2014 through 2015, the IRS itself actually diverted $134 million away from customer service to other activities, probably things like targeting Tea Party groups or stuff like that. I don't know. But in 2014, the IRS actually allocated $183 million in user fees to its customer service budget, but allocated only $49 million in 2015. That is a 76% self-inflicted budget cut here, guys. So anyway, the Commissioner Koshinen, he will appear before the House and Ways and Means Committee this morning, right now. And this is a week after the federal tax filing deadline, and he can probably be expect to be asked why the IRS cut its own customer service budget and continues to spend money on other questionable activities. And the report also noted that Koshinen reinstated bonuses weeks after his appointment. He has also allowed IRS employees to spend roughly half a million hours on union activities, and he failed to collect delinquent taxes owed by federal employees. You also have to add into this whole debacle the Obamacare situation, because I don't know if you guys have tried to figure out the Obamacare paperwork with the IRS stuff this year. Oh, my God. It's unbelievable. So, again, the IRS right now currently has spent, of their own money, $1.2 billion just on Obamacare right now. So, again, if you're not getting through to the IRS and you they're going to blame basically the cuts from Congress, but that's not exactly what's going on. Pretty staunch report here showing that the IRS did in fact cut their own budget by 76% this year. So if you're having trouble with your Obamacare paperwork, too bad. So sad. I don't know what to tell you. Okay, we got a little follow-up story. This is a quick follow-up here. The suspected horse thief. Remember we had this story, I think it was, 2 weeks ago? The guy stole a horse. He got basically roughed up pretty badly by the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Office deputies there, and was caught on camera from the NBC Los Angeles News helicopter. And anyway, settlement has already been reached in this particular case. $650,000 going to Mr. Francis Posuck, courtesy of the taxpayers there, after he received that beating on film. But to me personally, $650,000 seems a little paltry. I would probably have held out for at least twice that. But anyway, $650,000. Tough. Police-induced retirement fund, I guess. Then he has, all of us taxpayers out here, well, not here specifically, but if I was a California taxpayer, man, I'd be heated right now. Probably just about as heated as I would be if I was in Georgia right now. There's been that story of the toddler who was burned in the drug raid. I don't know if you guys have been following that story. It happened in Habersham, Georgia, probably about a year and a half ago, where the police showed up, no-knock warrant, broke into someone's house. They were looking for methamphetamines, and they were trying to arrest a specific person who wasn't actually at the scene. And in the onslaught of their raid, they threw some sort of flash grenade into a crib and really, really hurt this poor baby. And $1 million is essentially what's going to be going now. So to that family, $1 million. And this just broke last night. So again, just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous that these poor people, and I mean, $1 million, is that enough money to pay for your baby being burnt nearly to death in a crib? That doesn't seem like that's enough money to me. And still, I don't know, just ridiculous. That's what's going on there with that. So two decent follow-up stories, I guess, on police brutality stuff. Here's an interesting story, too. A grand jury in Kentucky has now charged 9 members with a supposed criminal syndicate over what authorities say was a year-long scheme involving the heist of nearly $100,000 worth of bourbon whiskey. And according to these indictments, unsealed on Tuesday in Franklin County, an employee of Wild Turkey and workers from the Buffalo Trace Distillery were among a group of nine that allegedly made its money by stealing liquor and reselling it illegally. At least 17 barrels of bourbon, listen to this, 20 cases of Pappy Von Winkle. Oh, man, my heart just bleeds right now. That's one of my absolute favorites. 20 cases of Pappy Van Winkle and one stainless steel barrel of Eagle Rare stolen by the group and later recovered by officials, with the latter, just that one stainless steel barrel of Eagle Rare, being worth about $12,000. NBC affiliates also reported the stolen bottles of Pappy, which is a world-renowned bourbon, one of my favorites, we have a P.O. box, hint, hint, was also being sold by the group at a price of about $800 a piece. But isn't that interesting? A conspiracy with people working for both Wild Turkey and Buffalo Trace in a year-long effort to extort bourbon out of their distilleries and actually made quite a bit of money in the process. Just fascinating stuff. Just never know what in the world is going on. We're getting ready to go to this break here real soon. I wanted to see if there's anything else. I do have a little bit of a Flacca story for you guys today, but it's nothing super exciting. But just to give you guys a heads up, the Broward County Sheriff's Office is taking Flacca very seriously, and they are now training their deputies about Flacca and how to deal with it, because obviously the concern is that the normal reaction to people who are crazy doesn't seem to work. They haven't been able to tase these people, and they haven't really been able to figure out how to control them. So again, the Broward Sheriff's Office there is putting in some new practices to try and figure out how to deal with somebody who is exhibiting the superhuman strength often affiliated with Flacca. So anyway, that's what your Flacca update is for the week. I got to go to this break, guys. I hope you guys are enjoying yourself. Keep it right here. We'll be back with a little bit more news. Robbie Holmes, holistic healer, will be joining us in about half an hour. Keep it right here, guys. We'll see you in a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Big business has discovered the preparedness market, and that makes it difficult to know where to go and who to trust. MyPatriotSupply.com is owned and operated by patriots just like you, has the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more. MyPatriotSupply.com has old-fashioned values and the absolute best customer service in the industry. Look for the deal of the day, unique affordable survival supplies that fit anyone's budget. Get same-day shipping on all orders and free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927, 866-229-0927, or visit MyPatriotSupply.com for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence. Shop with a name you know and a name you can trust. Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. Hemp HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
We hold these truths to be self-evident and that all men are created equal.
The Freedom Link.
With Joe Joseph, Monday through Friday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that. The mute button was not working for me there. I don't know what it is about live radio. Once in a while, we get into that little rut where the mute button doesn't decide to work. But I appreciate you guys all hanging out with me today. Appreciate you guys all being in the chat room at truthfrequencyradio.com as well. Can't tell you how much I appreciate that, really. Let's hop into some let's get into some economic news this morning because there is a lot of it. We're making good time on the news. The Dow currently down about 10 points. We're at 18,027. The S&P sitting right at 2,100, up about 2 points today. The DAX is also down about 150 points. That's the German stock exchange. I figured I'd start throwing that one in too because keep an eye on what's going on in Europe. The dollar index has fallen just a touch today, 97.57, which obviously means the euro is going to be on the rise just a touch, 108.11. And let's see where we're at. I don't have a BDI feed. We'll see if Truth can bring us one in. Check on the commodities here for just a second. The gold has come up a little bit, but we're still below the $1,200 mark. We're at 1191.30. We'll get you a bright, shiny ounce of gold. Silver at $15.81. Anything below 16, I think, is a buy. And crude oil on the rise again this morning, 57.86. So that's where we're at with that. And let's check the Bitcoin price here real quick. 232.60. So $232.60 will get you a bright, shiny Bitcoin right now. Okay. BDI, thank you, Truth, coming through. 599, down by 1 point today. Thank you very much, Truth. Appreciate you guys all being in the chat room and especially you doing your job like you always do for me there, Truth. It's very nice. A futures trader has been accused by U.S. authorities of contributing to the huge crash in the U.S. stock market back in 2010, known as the flash crash, which wiped out billions of U.S. companies' share prices and appeared in the Westminster's magistrate court on Wednesday. This futures trader who's being accused of these crimes, the trader, his last name is Soreau. He is 36 and he is opposing his extradition to the United States to face trial in an Illinois court. He was granted a conditional bail of 5.5 million pounds and Soreau must provide 5 million pounds of him by himself, with his parents obligated now to pay a security of 50,000 francs as well. And they would lose that if he failed to comply with his bail conditions without good cause. So anyway, this trader was arrested on Tuesday as the U.S. Department of Justice charged him for wire fraud, commodities fraud, and manipulation, and also one count of spoofing, where a trader places a bid or an offer with the intent of canceling it before execution. And this is part of this entire high-speed trading program that these guys are all invested in now, where they can essentially put out buy orders and then see the price go up, cancel them, and put in sell orders at a lower price to basically scoop the whole market up. And that's what this guy did. He was actually charged with 21 counts of this 2010 fraud. And when he used an automated trading program to manipulate the market for S&P 500 futures contracts, which are known as E-minis. And he was doing this on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, which is the largest U.S. futures market. The system allowed him to sell futures faster than they fell in value and then purchase them back before the prices rebounded. And the U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission accused Soreau of illegally obtaining more than $40 million and profit between 2010 and 2014. All of this according to the Financial Times. So the U.S. Department of Justice suspects that the trader provoked the so-called Black Thursday on May 6th of 2010, where the Dow Jones Index plunged 1,000 points and then leapt back to its previous value within just a few minutes. It became the steepest fall of a stock index in history, and the flash crash resulted in trading of shares of such companies like General Electric and Accenture at just 1 cent, and also the cancellation of thousands and thousands of trades. So Thoreau reportedly established companies in Nevis and Angula to shelter his assets from tax, having run his operation from his UK residence only about 17 miles west of London's financial center. But again, really shows exactly how dangerous these high-speed trading programs really are, and just how much manipulation can be used to produce enormous sums of money for these guys. Of course, these are the guys who produce nothing, and they make all of the money in bonuses when they're fleecing people out of their money, and it's just a disgusting system. But that's just another indication of what is going on in the world of Wall Street right now. Hopping over to Greece right now, obviously nobody knows what's going on with Greece. It's been back and forth every day for pretty much every hour almost in the last 2 weeks. But Greece right now is hoping to get 2.5 billion euros altogether by forcing public entities to lend it to the state, giving it enough room to meet its obligations through the end of May, according to the deputy finance minister just yesterday. So Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras, his administration on Monday ordered state entities and local governments to park idle cash at the central bank for the state to borrow. And this triggered an outcry from mayors and regional officials who have threatened now to challenge this whole situation in court. The deputy finance minister Mardis also said that his target again is 2.5 billion euros. There's been a lot of doubts about whether or not Greece can actually make this repayment to the International Monetary Fund on the 12th of May without an initial deal with its creditors. And Mardis initially said that the state was still short of about 350 million to 400 million euros to cover the wages, pensions, and other payments at the end of April, but later said that that hurdle had been overcome because some pension funds had since come forward to lend the money to the state. He also dismissed the report that Athens was considering a parallel currency or IOUs to make payments. He also said he was very confident that a deal would be struck with the creditors to avoid a default. So the European officials have said that the talks are not advanced enough to reach any kind of solution. They have also been urging Greece to step up their own efforts to strike an agreement with the international creditors. And a meeting of Eurozone finance ministers in Riga is going to be going on tomorrow, but it is no longer expected to culminate in any kind of deal after European and IMF creditors accused Athens of failing to provide the required data. And Athens also says that it was not to blame for the standoff. So again, major word for this entire story right now is still standoff. And we had the story yesterday of the massive deal between Gazprom and Greece, and I think that is going to play into this situation very significantly. But again, we'll have to wait and see just exactly what's going on. Again, Tsipras is due to meet the German Chancellor Angela Merkel on the sidelines of an EU summit in Brussels today. And Greek officials have expressed hope that this sideline meeting could trigger a breakthrough in the negotiations. I personally am not going to hold my breath on that one. I still think that Greece is probably going to end up outside of the euro sometime soon. Fast food giant McDonald's said on Wednesday, just yesterday, they're going to be planning a new turnaround. They got a new turnaround plan because for the last couple of weeks and for the last couple of months, their sales have just been dismal. I mean, going down and down and down, which is great news if you're out there hoping for the demise of McDonald's. But anyway, the ubiquitous burger and fry chain said that U.S. sales, the largest share of the global income, fell an additional 2.6% from a year ago compared to different outlets. Sales in the Asia-Pacific and Middle East region dropped 8.3%, which helped bring overall global sales down that 2.3%. This is reflecting negative guest traffic in all segments, according to the company. So the total revenue sank 11% down to $5.96 billion in the quarter up to March 31st, and net income actually plunged 32.6% all the way down. So basically they're losing about 84 cents a share right now year over year. And they really don't have a great plan right now. I'm not gonna lie. Other than closing restaurants or revamping menus, Easterbrook, who's the guy who just took over as CEO a few weeks ago, he's already announced key measures to shore up the company I don't know what they're going to be, though. He's not really saying much. He said the chain is basically going to sell more chicken now than burgers. It's also going to stop serving chicken raised with antibiotics, which are important to human health. But also people are starting to grow worried over the resistance to crucial drugs if you're taking, you know, a lot of antibiotics in with your McDonald's chicken. And also at the beginning of April, the company announced it would increase wages for 90,000 employees in the company-owned restaurants in the U.S., as well as offering them paid time off. So attempting to try and improve morale, maybe moving towards a more chicken-centric menu, less the antibiotics. I guess those are all moves that we could support. I would never go to a McDonald's again. I don't care what they do. But anyway, that's what's going on. McDonald's sales going down, people voting with their dollars. We love to see that. Kind of follows the story yesterday about Monsanto losing a whole bunch of money. Here's a story about a company losing a lot of money that isn't because people are voting with their dollars. We have to talk a little bit about Caterpillar today. According to the latest Caterpillar retail sales data, they are now reporting an unprecedented 28 months of declining global retail sales in the month of March. They saw a 16% year-over-year collapse in China after a 20% plunge in 2014 and a 24% plunge the year before, while Latin America has also seen a 34% year-over-year crash after a 21% drop the year before. So Caterpillar, dismal sales right now, obviously has a lot to do with the drying up of the shale oil market here in the United States, but just really, really bad. And just to put that into context, 28 months of declining retail sales. During the great financial crisis, Caterpillar actually only suffered 19 months of consecutive declines. And as of March right now, that number is now at 28 months in continual decline for Caterpillar. Wow, that's a big deal. Also, too, crude inventories rose for a record 15th week straight, and production is continuing to drop. But just, you know, we've had this story over and over the last few weeks. They're still producing a lot of oil, and they still don't know where to put it. And obviously, if you're thinking about a supply and demand kind of angle, having too much supply and not enough demand means the prices are going to go down. But enter the global war scenario with what's going on in Yemen right now, and we see that resulting in at least a little bit of a rise of oil today. So that's where we are all with that. Let's move into some science and tech stuff here right now. Facebook chat, we're going to talk about Facebook chat for a second, seems fairly innocuous, right? But a group of coders and bloggers with the lead gentleman being named Bosnadev thought that the Facebook chat was probably fairly safe, right? But they used the communication program to send a link, and something did not seem right. So they checked the IP activity, and they noticed 16 different internet protocol ID tags. These ID tags are called IP version 6, and this was for a single Facebook chat. So basically that piqued their interest. So Bosnadev ran another test. He created a brand new URL and sent it through a Facebook chat window, despite the fact that this new web link only existed in a single chat screen and nowhere else on the internet. They also noticed a similar amount of activity. Two IP addresses were their own, but Bosnadev said that he had no explanation for the other 10 that appeared after that. So it's been public knowledge for years that Facebook and other social media platforms monitor chats for signs of criminal activity. And as unsettling as that may be, it's done with the social media company's own software. So for better or worse, that monitoring is supposed to be done in-house. But this particular situation was different. The IP addresses led to a third-party observer, and when Bosnadev ran a trace, the trail led them to Recorded Future, which is an American/Swedish startup, which has been backed by Google as well as the NSA and the CIA. So the company can essentially be summarized as the government's attempt to create a digital Nostradamus, a data vacuum which continually analyzes the open web and attempts to quantify that information in order to predict the future. If Recorded Future notices a series of newspaper articles about an upcoming baseball game, it can reasonably assume said baseball game will be taking place. And it's sort of like that, only about 100 billion times more complicated, taking millions of factors into account in order to predict terrorist attacks or other types of disorder. So whether the program even works is a debate for a different matter, but this admitted scanning of the open web really doesn't explain what a government-funded company is doing scanning private Facebook chat windows. And in a response, Facebook released a statement saying that while investigating this post, they have confirmed that Facebook does not use Recorded Future to scan any private content. That means they have not partnered with or directed Recorded Future to scan anyone's message links. And the social media giant also suggested that another interaction, including one that could be occurring on the client machine, is producing the URL and generating this behavior. Recorded Future also responded to the allegation, saying, "Our system follows this URL after it was posted on a public site. Our system constantly explores links published on the web. We've checked our logs and confirmed that this is what happened in this specific case. It's not related to any Facebook chat messaging containing this link. Our system doesn't access that information." So there you have kind of a rub, because that Facebook link was never on the web. It never actually went to any type of web. But this future, what's it called? Recorded Future did end up categorizing this link that these guys created, which does fly in the face of their response to these allegations. So whatever the case may be, the government intrusion into private internet activity is probably not very surprising to any of you guys out there after we've listened to everything that Edward Snowden has been revealing. But again, Facebook Messenger, maybe not a safe option for communication at this point. And this is backed up now by a group of coders and bloggers that have basically tracked exactly what's going on in that realm. So interesting stuff there. Also, need to talk a little bit about Pirate Bay. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Pirate Bay or how to use torrents or anything like that. I personally have no knowledge at all about how to use a torrent, minus whatever I have happened to read in a pamphlet here and there. But anyway, for those of you guys who are aware of Pirate Bay and perhaps, might be somebody who wants to use that service, got to give you a heads up. Swedish court will decide next week if the Pirate Bay should be stripped of its SE top-level domain address, which would, again, be another blow to the site. And the Bay has resided at that domain for 2 years since the last offensive against its address. The Pirate Bay originally had a .org domain, but that was abandoned for good back in 2012. And the site has hopped from one domain to the next, covering the .sx, which is St. Martin, .gy, which is Guyana, and .pe, which is Peru, and also .ac on Ascension Island, amongst others. And every time it feels threatened, the site would move again, and it eventually came to rest at piratebay.se in April of 2013. But according to the case filed by the prosecutor in Sweden, where the SE domain and the Pirate Bay do originate, the SE domain names assist site operators in perpetrating copyright infringement, and the Swedish government should take over the addresses. So the Swedish government is basically suing the registrar right now, and those behind the Pirate Bay have stated in the past that they have a number of different domains in reserve in case it is forced to move again, but we all don't know if that's entirely true. Again, we might be finding out very soon, though. So again, next week, who knows where Pirate Bay will end up next. Not that I would ever encourage anybody to use that service, just kind of throwing that out there in case it's something that you guys care about. Former customers of Mt. Gox, once the world's largest trading platform for Bitcoin, can finally file claims for lost assets. And the filings are starting over a year after the exchange collapsed, with Bitcoins worth hundreds of millions of dollars going missing. Claims will be accepted until May 29th. And the bankruptcy trustee, Nobukai Kobayashi, announced Wednesday at a Mt. Gox creditors meeting. And the claims can be submitted online at claims.mtgox.com. And users have the option of sending them in via Kraken, which is a Bitcoin exchange operated by Payward, which has been helping Kobayashi in investigating the lost coins and also setting up the claims system. So Kraken said it's offering creditors various incentives for filing via its platform, including up to $1 million in free trade volume per creditor. And documents posted on the Mt. Gox website, Kobayashi encouraged users to register via Kraken, saying that any Bitcoin distributions he authorizes after analyzing claims would be made through that exchange. So making distributions in Bitcoin rather than cash would go against tradition in Japanese bankruptcy law. But Kobayashi says he is consulting with the Tokyo District Court, which has overseen the case, to make that possible. Creditors must meet a few requirements, such as knowing the original email address they used to create the Mt. Gox account to file online. Otherwise, they can submit hard copy claims. And one of the reasons it's taken so long to begin the claims process is that there are over 100,000 Mt. Gox creditors around the world, according to Kobayashi, adding that he will also decide whether to accept or reject these claims by the 9th of September. He also announced that he has continued to recover funds owing to Mt. Gox, and that the Bitcoin balance for the bankruptcy estate following probes into the company's Bitcoin addresses is roughly 202,000 Bitcoins, which is currently worth today about $47.7 $1 million. And for those of you guys out of the loop, Mount Gox actually collapsed in the 28th of February back in 2014 with liabilities somewhere in the neighborhood of 6.5 billion yuan, or about $63.6 million, and it said it was unable to account for about 850,000 bitcoins worth nearly half a billion dollars at the time, which was a staggering sum, possibly purloined by hackers who exploited a bug in the Bitcoin system, according to the company. A lot of people also believe that that was a definite inside job, that the people at Mt. Gox themselves took that money and then jammed out, which I guess we don't know. We'll have to wait and hear more from Mr. Kayabashi about that. How about an Uber story from hell? And we're talking about Uber, the car passenger system, or whatever you want to call it, the fake taxi app. This poor woman, Jamie Hassel, okay, I'll tell you what, talk about a head shaker. She got charged, listen to this, $16,000 for a 7-mile journey across New York, right? She said her driver was on the phone the whole time, cut across lanes, even drove down a bus lane during the 35-minute trip from hell, as she describes it, from her East Williamsburg apartment into Midtown East. So again, the story is actually a little bit more unusual than that. She received the initial bill, which is only about $56, and then she made an immediate email to Uber support to complain that she had been overcharged and that the driver had unnecessarily extended the ride. And within a few days, the Uber representatives had written back to inform her that the company agreed that the journey was quote-unquote inefficient and she would get a refund of $15. But the following morning, she received a different email which stated that she owed Uber more than $16,000, although they did, in fact, return about $4,000 of that to her. So her total ended up being $12,251. Obviously, she completely freaked out and called Uber again. They have since wiped the bill clean and offered to pay her the original $15 refund, but she says she can't really trust them anymore. And apparently, they have come back now to refund the entire portion of her ride. But again, $16,000 bill from Uber, that would definitely make you go, what in the world is going on? I still support Uber, though. I'm a big fan of that. And if I lived in a city where I had a car and where there were people, I would totally be all over that. Okay, let's hop into some health news. Man, we're making great time today. Tell you what. So we got to talk about California right now. This this mandatory vaccine bill actually advanced again this week. So a week after the supporters put the brakes on the legislation that would eliminate most exemptions for vaccinating school children, the Senate Education Committee just yesterday overwhelmingly voted to advance one of the most contentious bills in Sacramento this year. This is Senate Bill 277. It's going to repeal the state's current personal belief exemption as well as religious exemptions and only allow vaccinated children to attend public and private schools. Medical exemptions will still be permitted as they are in every state. But this bill would also require schools to notify parents of immunization rates at their children's schools. And this Wednesday's vote came to 7-2, came after the bill's co-authors agreed to amend the controversial legislation to address concerns raised by committee members during last week's meetings. So they actually tweaked the bill a little bit. Listen to this, to allow family members who choose not to immunize their children to participate in multi-family private homeschools instead of just a single family homeschool environment. They also changed the bill to allow families who choose not to immunize their children to use the public school independent study option that exists in current law and it is administered by local education agencies. So basically that's what they're saying right now. You either vaccinate or you homeschool. That's the long and the short of it is going to be there in California. They say if you don't want to vaccinate, you need to homeschool your kids. And the other option that I really hate is this idea that they're going to push you into some kind of multiple family private homeschool setting, because wouldn't that be a really easy way to, drop some kind of communicable disease into that? And then you've got basically a whole bunch of people who aren't immunized affected by something. And then you've got a great humanitarian crisis that you can hang your hat on and say, look at all these silly homeschool kids getting all together and now they're all sick. We told you this was going to happen. If you'd only listen to us, we know so much better than you guys do. I think that's probably where that's going to go. So anyway, that's what's happening there in California. Also in Indiana, there's a pretty big story happening right now. The Indiana governor, Mike Pence, has extended a state of emergency as the state battles the worst HIV outbreak in its history. At least 135 people have been diagnosed in the two counties, and the epidemic is linked to a needle sharing by opiate users. So the original public health emergency was declared on the 26th of March and would have expired on April 24th. But according to Indiana law, a state of disaster emergency may not continue longer than 30 days unless the governor renews it. So Pence did extend the emergency via executive order earlier this week. The epidemic has grown to 135 cases, 129 of them confirmed, and 6 preliminary positives. It also spread from Scott County into Jackson County. And there are 5 cases in Jackson, according to health officials there. All of the cases are linked to intravenous drug abuse, mostly with prescription painkiller called Opana. And so this executive order allows the Incident Command Center, created by the Indiana State Department of Health, under the initial declaration, to continue coordinating HIV treatment and substance abuse treatment. It also continues to require state and local health law enforcement officers and emergency responding agencies, as well as healthcare providers and hospitals, to cooperate and assist in disaster response. So the state of emergency also extends the length of the limited and focused short-term needle exchange program in Scott County, but still doesn't extend the program into neighboring counties, which a lot of critics contend is a massive failure on the part of the state. So Pence has consistently said that he does not support needle exchanges as an anti-drug policy, although public health officials and medical professionals say that they are an effective way to combat the spread of diseases during IV drug use. So health officials told reporters Tuesday that 95 people have been visited in the community outreach center set up in Scott County under the initial executive order, bringing in 3,100 needles total, and the center has distributed 3,400 needles after that. It is illegal in Indiana to conduct a needle exchange program, but the state legislature is also considering lifting that ban. An Indiana State Senate committee heard testimony Monday about a proposal to allow counties at the highest risk of HIV outbreak linked to intravenous drug use to set up a needle exchange program, according to the Indianapolis Star. So Joey Fox, director of legislative affairs at the Indiana State Department of Health, also signaled that the administration may be softening their stance on these programs. Obviously, in the wake of the massive HIV outbreak there in Indiana, all stemming from intravenous drug use, probably a good idea to start doing the whole needle exchange program. We are just about out of time. I'm totally going to miss out on telling you a story about a guy from Colorado Springs who went totally postal on his computer, took it outside, shot it 8 times with a gun, and now he's been arrested. So that was something that happened. Also a guy from Hillsborough County in Florida caught a water moccasin, decided to give it a kiss on the head, and then got bit in the face. He's currently in the hospital as well, so don't do that. Don't do that stuff. Anyway, we got to go to this break, guys. We'll come back, and Robbie Holes will be here. You're going to love this. We'll see you guys in just a second.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Did you know that the blue lotus flower was used by the ancient Egyptians as an aphrodisiac to experience feelings of euphoria and ecstasy? And ecstasy. And ecstasy. Did you know that Thai kratom was used by the Buddhist monks to produce a relaxing and dreamlike state? Did you know San Pedro cactus was used by the Native Americans to quest for visions and heal the body? Bouncing Bear Botanicals is your number one supplier of rare and sacred plants and a proud sponsor of Truth Frequency Radio. By clicking on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, you can learn more about a vast selection of entheogens, including Amanita muscaria, also known as the sacred mushroom. So click on the banner at truthfrequencyradio.com, and you'll also get up to $40 off your next order.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
No hate, no hype, no fear. We are TFR
Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break, and thank you guys for joining us for the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast this morning. This is going to be a fantastic hour. I've been really looking forward to this all week since I got Robbie Holz's books, and really, really been excited to bring her to the program. So for you guys who don't know, we're going to be talking with an international speaker and a holistic consultant, also an award-winning author. She is the co-author of two different books, one with her late husband, called Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I blew through this one last night. It is riveting. I had at least 3 or 4 different full body tingle moments while reading this book. I really kind of liken it to a journey to Ixalan, kind of the Carlos Castaneda type stuff. Really, really fascinating and really, really going to be influential on a lot of people, I believe. She's also a co-author of another book called Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. So obviously we're going to be talking about holistic health today and natural healing, which is something that we do talk about quite a bit here at the Red Pill Reports, Robbie. We talk often about frequency, about the power of thought, and also the power of nutrition and how we can all kind of take our health into our own hands. But you have really done something much different here, Robbie. This is kind of going to a whole nother level in terms of self-healing. So first and foremost, Robbie Holz, let me welcome you to the program. Thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast today.
Thank you. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
I do want to highly recommend before we get going too, you guys should go check out Robbie's website, which is Holz Wellness, HOLZWELLNESS.com. And you can find these two books there. You can also find them on Amazon and at Goodreads, both incredibly highly recommended, Robbie. I mean, we're talking 5 stars across the board here and, with there's no shortage of amazing information in these books. I can tell you that, ladies and gentlemen. I would highly recommend checking them out. Robbie, I think I want to hear your story, and I really want to hear the story as it relates to your husband as well. Maybe we could start there in the middle or in the beginning with both of your experiences with Western medicine. I think that might be a good place to start.
Okay. Well, my story was that I delivered my son back in 85 and ended up with a blood transfusion. It was a rough delivery, and that blood transfusion had hepatitis C in it. So at that point, they didn't even have a name for it. They called it non-A, non-B hepatitis. And so if they don't have a name, they sure as heck don't have any kind of cure or treatment for it.
Right.
So the hepatitis almost killed me. And then the experimental treatment they put me on almost killed me. So I almost died twice. But I was just determined, JD, to survive because I had this little boy that was too young to remember his mother.
Right.
And I wanted to raise him. So I started, when Western medicine didn't have anything else they could offer me, I started looking and took my health into my own hands and mm-hmm. discovered that there's all kinds of answers out there. And actually ended up following, unknowingly, but following the same principles of healing that the Aborigines gave us, and have healed myself of hepatitis C and fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome. I was in such bad shape, I couldn't finish a sentence because I didn't know what I was talking about. I had brain damage. I couldn't get out of bed for 9 months. I couldn't walk to the mailbox. I was a wreck, and I managed to, I mean, now my friends tell me that I have the energy of a chipmunk on crack. That's where I have to be. Sounds like you do too. So.
I owe my energy to Tangy Tangerine, which is my very favorite product from Youngevity, and also my two cups of coffee that I drink every morning, and that usually gets me up and keeps me rocking. And I also went for a bike ride this morning, so I try and stay active, and I think that's a big key to it. But, you know, part of this journey that you've been, I want to hear a little bit just about the journey in general, what it was like to actually go there and deal with Aboriginals, because I think a lot of people might have a lot of misconceptions about, you know, what an Aboriginal society would look like today. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I healed myself before I went into the Outback. Gary's journey was a little differently. He was a physicist, and he was a scientist, and he was actually a quadriplegic from multiple sclerosis. He didn't have any feeling from the neck down. And he had been that way for at least 7 years as a quadriplegic. And the doctors told him that he didn't have much longer to live. And so as a last desperate effort, he went into the Outback with this tribe because he heard that they had remarkable healing abilities. Now, these are remote Aboriginals. You got to remember that the Outback is vast. It's huge. And it's very easy for these remote Aboriginals to be tucked away and safeguarded in this vast desert without ever having any communication with Western civilization, quote unquote.
The book and Gary's story does a great job of pointing that out too. Just about, I mean, you almost feel the grueling car ride that would have had to have taken place with him being bound in a wheelchair and having to go, you know, not only with the airline flight just to get to Sydney, but then, you know, to travel as far as he did. And even his host was like, hey, you're lucky we're not going to Perth because we'd be in this car for like a week. And I don't think people really understand how big Australia is. I certainly didn't. And when I read that, I thought, wow, that place must be a lot larger than I had originally anticipated.
Oh, it's huge. When I went there, I took a plane from Brisbane into the desert, and we flew in a big airliner over desert for like 5 hours.
Right.
And that's just getting us to the middle of it. It's vast. It's really vast. So, so when he went into the Outback, everybody told him he was nuts, that was just insanity. And they thought if nobody goes with him, he won't go.
Right.
Well, he's a very tenacious guy. And so he went anyway, thinking that he probably wouldn't survive, and actually brought a voice-activated tape recorder so that his kids would know what happened to him.
Wow.
And those are actually recorded conversations that are in the book. We took those right off the tape.
Right.
So he went into the Outback with his tribe. Now, the tribe had never seen a white person before, and these tribes are really small. They're like about maybe two dozen people.
Okay.
But there was one man who spoke English because he had children in Brisbane. So he had an apartment in Brisbane, and he kind of traversed both worlds. And that was Gary's contact person.
Okay.
And when Gary contacted this number that he was given, Ray was the man, Ray said, well, what took you so long? We've been waiting for 4 months.
Right.
And Gary had just learned about them the day before because they're so tapped into this greater consciousness, this grid, if you will, this one consciousness. They knew he was coming, and they knew they were supposed to give their healing secrets to this man.
Wow.
And so they had brought in a woman who was part English, part Aboriginal from some part of Australia. She had, I think her mother was Aboriginal. And so she had been brought in, but she was not allowed to stay in the village with the remote tribe. But she was brought in because she knew English, and so she could work with Gary and teach him. And they had spent literally 4 months trying to come up with metaphors so that he would understand their teachings, so that he could bring this information back to the Western culture, because we really didn't understand how healing worked, and they knew we needed to get this information. So that was a beautiful gift for them to give that to us. So, but it's a very different culture. And I thought it was really cute, JD, and I don't know if we put this in the book or not, that, you know, this tribe had never been exposed to a white person. And the little boy loved the wheels on Gary's wheelchair. Isn't that just typical of a boy?
Right, totally.
Yeah. So he went into the Outback and stayed with them probably about 10 days' time. And in that 10 days' time, regained feeling in his body, his entire body, which he hadn't had in 7 years, clumsily walked on that airplane aisle, supporting himself with the seats on that plane ride back, and more than anything was transformed emotionally. He really understood what had happened to create that disease and how to uncreate it.
Well, and I'm glad that you bring up the emotional aspect, because, you know, when reading the book, it seems like most of what the conversation was between Gary and the healer was about coming to terms with emotional things.
Exactly. That what the Aboriginal will people will tell you is that there's always an emotional root. Even with my blood transfusion, there's always an emotional core. And that if you don't get that emotional core, if you don't pull that out, discover it, and then release it, let it go, it's like picking the top of a dandelion. Line. It's just going to come right back. And I think we all know people who've had tumors removed surgically and they come back again, or they get the same disease over and over. It's because they haven't made those emotional changes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important. And that's, I think, the big one of the big things that Gary understood is that he had had a very abusive childhood with an alcoholic father who used to beat him. And he was so brilliant, Gary, in his mind, he knew how to numb himself emotionally until he literally numbed himself physically with MS.
Wow.
He had to understand that and then go back to that emotional root of forgiving his father and realizing his father was a one of the best teachers in his life. It was a painful teacher, but it was a very strong influence in his life.
That's just absolutely a remarkable story, though, to think that we really truly all have that power inside of us and just have not tapped into it yet. So what was it you think that was the aha moment for Gary while he was there where he, because to me it seems like you have to have a certain open-mindedness and a willingness to be able to say, okay, you know, this problem that I have might actually be self-created. And, how do they recommend that you make that mental shift, Robbie?
Well, I think you recognize, like the Aboriginal people do, that these things that come into our life, they seem like they're tremendously painful and that they are huge challenges. But what the Aboriginal people understand is that they're huge blessings. You just have to get to the other side and realize, as many of us do, like when I was in my 30s and dying, and it put me down a road that I was not going to go down until I was forced into it. Well, I of course, it ended up being the biggest blessing in my life because I ended up really paying attention to what really matters and really understanding what I needed to understand at a very young age rather than on my deathbed in my 80s. So, you know, Gary started to understand. I think the aha for him was to let go of this anger towards his father because it was really harming his body. His body at some point just couldn't withstand that kind of toxic negative emotion anymore. Our emotions and bodies are too connected. They're just, you cannot separate them. And so this is what science is waking up to and what the Aboriginals have known for over 60,000 years is that you've got to have an alignment of the body, mind, and spirit. And so those emotions have to be on board, not just physical. Yes, I love that you do the exercise and that you eat really healthy. That's fabulous. But we also need to pay attention to what are we feeding ourselves emotionally? And most of us, and I really want our listeners to hear this, most of us are not supposed to be sick. We're not supposed to be sick. It's just that our bodies cannot handle the emotional weight that it's being asked to hold.
Mm-hmm.
It's too much.
I agree. And that's what, you know, I always think about that word dis-ease as opposed to disease. I think about dis-ease because if you're in an emotional uneasy state, then you're putting your whole body into dis-ease. And of course, there's going to be a reaction to that, isn't there, Robbie?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's actually pretty predictable. If you're an overachiever like me and you manage to create fibromyalgia, that means it's entirely throughout your whole system. Like you've got a lot of fear, a lot of negativity throughout your whole system. Where other people, if you have, for instance, breast cancer, that's usually that you're holding a lot of grief in that chest area. And it's very specific where these emotions settle. And you need to pay attention to what emotions create wellness and what emotions create disease, because they're very different. There was that Dr. Emoto's water experiments showed
yes.
us how it's a different cell that's created. And some of the most toxic emotions, and again, not that there's anything wrong with any of this, it's just that is it getting you where you want to go? And I was raised Catholic, so I know guilt up and down. It's my default mode, I'm telling you. But guilt is one of the hardest things on the body. It's so hard on the body. And so it creates a different cell. I could go into more about that, but just recognizing that it's really hard on you. Whereas if you're in more, it's really very simple. It's either fear-based stuff, which is the mind-generated, or it's love-based emotions, which mm-hmm. are very healthy and healing. So if you're into gratitude, some of the fastest healing emotions are gratitude and forgiveness.
I'm so happy you mentioned that because that's one of my mantras is trying to always have an attitude of gratitude. No matter how bad things are, you can always sit down and focus on the silver linings. You know what I mean?
That's a huge key right there, JD, is, is get your mind to shift out of that negative stuff and start focusing on things that you can be grateful for. There's always something to be grateful for.
There is.
And that creates a different response in the body. It actually creates a different response in a lot of respects and brings more of the same to you, and it creates a healing response throughout the body.
Robbie,
very
is there,
simple.
I got to ask, is there a way or a technique that you might be able to offer for people who are just kind of coming into the realization that controlling of your thoughts is kind of an important deal? You know, kind of either thinking about things like meditation or thinking about mental tricks, maybe replacing mantras in your mind when you're catching yourself. Like, how do you catch yourself when you're having a negative thought and then recognize that it's detrimental and then fix that? You know, what's that mental trick look like? And do you have any advice that you can offer in that field?
Sure. I love that question. Nobody's ever asked that one. You know, it's always very simple. Like the Aboriginal people will tell you, it's just that the mind complicates things ridiculously.
Yes.
It's, do you feel good or do you not feel good? It's that simple. If you don't feel good, it's because you've moved away from that base of love and contentment and peace that's always running through you. And at that, when you start wandering away from that, you start feeling a little jealousy, resentment, anger, guilt, whatever, that's because your mind has wandered you away from that base. So it's about bringing that mind back to feeling good again. It's consciously shifting it out of this fear-based stuff, the negative stuff, and consciously shifting that mind and getting it on board to be, can I find some compassion here? Okay, can I, let's be patient. Let's extend some kindness to myself in the moment. That gratitude again, those are huge. It's a different, so it's very simple, but what happens is most people are running on autopilot. It's a very busy society. We are overcommitted to, and, but for the most part, our minds are running us and we don't even recognize it. So you need to step back more often and observe the mind. Isn't that clever how my mind catches me when I'm so tired and vulnerable? And that's so easy for me to go into this negative state when I'm tired.
Yes.
You start observing it more and you just, three words, let it go. I have a friend who's got that bumper sticker, let go or be dragged. It's so true. If you simply quit playing with some of these thoughts that the mind offers you and you just stop engaging in it, it dissolves like sugar in water. It just goes away. But a lot of us are so used to just going down certain pathways with the mind, and before you know it, we've built up an emotion, and then we got a story, and then we got a movie trailer, and we share it with other people. And it's just that the Aboriginal people will say, just experience it. It's here for a reason. It's here to help you grow and teach you something, and then let it go with gratitude and open up to the next experience.
Wow, that is so profound. I mean, that really is profound. I love the idea of extending some kindness to yourself. I think a lot of people, you kind of hit the nail on the head here when we're talking about society these days. Everybody is just running around trying to reach this high bar that's been set for no reason by everyone else. Everybody's seeking profit in fake money, and we're all running around like crazy people staring at our cell phones, and it's overwhelming. And I agree that, you know, without taking a minute and getting into a macro perspective where you say, whoa, okay, this is what society really is doing to me. You know, what's my real role in it, and how is it actually affecting my health? Until you can actually do that, it's difficult to make a change, and especially in such an overwhelming society with the, you know, the technical doodads and the stupid music that they play on the radio. It's just, it's overwhelming these days, Robbie.
Well, and I think you mentioned a good point there. It's not just society that's driving us, it's our minds that are driving us.
That's right.
So that's where you want to go back to find that emotional core. Why do I feel I need to drive my, why am I allowing my slave driving mind to control me like this? Honestly, when I listen to the criticism going on in my head, I'm thinking, I wouldn't date you for a minute, and yet I let you go on and on and on.
Yes.
Because I'm not aware of it. So that's why you want to start stepping back a little bit, observing these thoughts that are coming to you. Does this serve me? Is this where I, taking me where I want to go? And I would recommend three things. Stop all judgments, stop all comparisons, and stop all criticism. That's just mind stuff. It's just mind stuff. And that's what we're waking up to. And so we're no longer being imprisoned by these minds that are so critical, that are driving us to illness. it's waking up to how the mind was always designed to be a tool, but never designed to be in charge. And so you start waking up to what's running on autopilot. What do I have running in the background? And a lot of times it's from what happened when you were really little. You don't even know it's there. Like my guilt, my friend, it's like the friend that never stops giving. It's just constantly there.
Right.
So I have to be aware of it and embrace it, not throw negative anger or, you know, but just be aware of it and then just shift it when I can, one moment, one thought at a time.
Wow. I just love this because to me, you know, I don't know. I always come back to, you know, you mentioned that you were Catholic. I went to Catholic high school as well. So I'm right there with you with the whole understanding of guilt thing. But, you know, one of the things that I deal with as an ex-Catholic and as somebody who has a lot of friends who are really into the Bible is that we get into this situation where my very Orthodox Christian friends will say, the only way to get into heaven is to accept Jesus Christ into your heart. And I understand that, but I always have to stop them and I have to say, do you understand the depth of what it was that you just said? Because what you're telling me is the same thing that science is telling me, is that the choice is mine and that Jesus, you know, if you believe in that, he's already done his work. He's sitting on a cloud somewhere drinking a Mai Tai. He doesn't care. The option is on the table and the option is yours. You have to make the conscious decision to accept Jesus into your heart. You have to make the decision. You are in fact the gatekeeper for your own enlightenment or whatever you want to call it. And it always surprises me that there's people out there who just can't seem to make that connection and how serious it actually is that your thoughts direct everything that's going on around you all the time, Robbie.
Absolutely. And quantum physics. I mean, the Aboriginals are living this stuff. They know it, but we call it quantum physics. What you're thinking about is what you're drawing to you. So if you were really, really, really afraid of something, then you are really, really, really drawing it to you because you're thinking about it and giving it energy and giving it power. So it's about refocusing on what you really want, really paying attention to what you really want. But, you know, you brought up a good point there about other people's choices. And when it's the mind that has expectations about how people should act, how people should behave, it's that judging, comparison, criticism thing again. So if everybody would allow people to live their choices and pay attention to what's my choice, what am I adding to this? Because this emotion that we're having, it's an energy, and science has proven this. It's an energy that emits off of us. It runs through the body, and it affects other people around you. I mean, you can walk into a room, and you can feel the energy from somebody. Sometimes good, sometimes not so good.
Absolutely.
So what you want to pay attention to, even especially in the world that we live in now, is what kind of energy am I adding to it? If I turn on the news and it really frustrates me and gets me angry, what kind of energy am I adding to my body, to those around me, to the planet?
Especially,
so turn it off and start refocusing on the people who are making a positive difference.
Mm-hmm.
They don't make the news, but they're out there. Start refocusing on a planet where everyone, like the Aboriginals, so beautifully are connected to the Earth. We've lost that connection. Get that reconnection again. I was listening to there was a great group they were from all over the world. This was just recently created. And they decided, we're going to help heal the Earth. We're going to start, you know, treating the river like a brother, like a dear brother, remembering that again. And I love that they were like, no anger, no blame. It's just, what can we do now to make a difference, to help heal this planet, maybe clean up a river, maybe, you know, just. But I love that it was no anger, no blame. Let's just move forward. What a beautiful gift.
It is, too, and that's one of those adult decisions that we're always talking about here on Red Pill Reports, is that sometimes you just have to focus on the fact that you are in this rut, we're in this position that we're in now, and dwelling on the past is not going to change the future, and worrying about the future is just borrowing worry from tomorrow, and that's, again, going to have more negative effect on you. But being able to actually take that step and say, okay, we're done with that train of thought and we're going to go moving on in the right direction here, regardless of what that is. And that is really the nature of the holistic, you know, the holistic arena that we're talking about today, Robbie.
Exactly. And that's a good way to tell that your mind has got hold of you when it wants to drag you off into the past,
mm-hmm.
or it wants to bring the fears of the future to you. You only ever have, and Eckhart Tolle did a fabulous job of letting us realize, well, you only have the present moment. That's really all you have.
That's right.
That's where your power is in that present moment. So be creating from this moment. So you can tell that mind is slipped behind the driver's wheel when it's taking you off into the past, you know, with the guilt or the shame. It's like, let it go. Come back to the present moment again. And I like to put a higher consciousness behind that steering wheel. Certainly not my head. My mind really doesn't know how to do these things. It's not designed to know how to do these things. But a higher consciousness is, whatever that means to you, whether it's your soul or a higher self or Jesus or, you know, guardian angels, but a higher consciousness than your mind. And what we're seeing planetary-wise is a world controlled by a fear-based mind.
Yes.
And that is shifting, and we're shifting from that heart back to the mind, to back to the heart again, letting the heart motivate us, acting out of more loving responses rather than the fear-based mind.
A huge difference. Absolutely huge difference and a pivotal change here as we're moving forward. I want to touch on a quick question that my producer put up. We've talked a lot about the pineal gland on the show and also about kind of some of the agenda of control that exists here, especially in the United States, trying to keep us unwell. You know, we've got the Rothschild collusion with the American Medical and the American Dental Association. You've also got the Rothschilds. I don't know if you know this, Robbie, but they actually changed music. They took the A of nature, which we could, that would be the key above middle C on the piano, your A 440. It's not supposed to be 440. It's supposed to be 432 in keeping with nature, but the Rothschilds got invested in symphonies back in the day, and they basically changed the frequencies that we hear and are presented with. I mean, we're talking about like the ABC chimes, the church bells, the xylophones at the symphonies that we see and love. There's so much agenda out there that is trying to control our ability to have positive thoughts, in my opinion. And also, we have this idea that fluoridation of water might actually contribute to the calcification of your pineal gland. So my producer was curious about what kind of toxic body or toxic mind conditions might exist that you might actually have to overcome before you can get to a point of being open or open enough to understand the connections between emotion and your well-being. And Robbie, I'm totally setting you up for failure right now because I just realized that the break is sneaking up on us. So we're going to have to go to this 3-minute break. So you'll have plenty of time to think about your answer to that question.
If I can remember it.
I know. I probably won't remember it either.
No, I got it.
It was posted in the chat, so I'll be able to come back to it. But really appreciate you being here. Appreciate all of you guys hanging out in the chat room here at truthfrequencyradio.com. If you have questions for Miss Robbie, we will definitely steward those across. I will do my best to open up the phones here in about 15 minutes as well for questions, but I definitely want to get more into this conversation as we move forward. So keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. We'll be right back with Ms. Robbie Holes in 1 second. See you guys.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him. Right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really?
I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow. Why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine now. Only at MUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods. But what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy 3 or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same-day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Within Radio with Tom Barnes and Tommy Whitgate, Saturdays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us through that 3-minute break. We are moving into our final segment with today's guest, Robbie Holz. I would highly recommend you guys go check out holzwellness.com, H-O-L-Z wellness.com. And also, cannot recommend both of these books highly enough, guys. Secrets of an Aboriginal Healing and also Aboriginal Secrets of Awakening. We're talking obviously about natural health today and holistic health, which is kind of a little bit different than natural health in my opinion. And before the break, I was trying to challenge you, Miss Robbie, with a question about the pineal gland. And I think really I want to kind of rephrase it and just ask you how much emphasis the Aboriginals put on the pineal gland. And if, in your estimation, if our physical brain makeup in terms of toxicity of our brains, is that going to be a constraint in our ability to burst through some of this negative thought patterns that we all have?
Well, the pineal gland is like the antenna. I mean, it really is our ability to reach these higher consciousness states.
Agreed.
But, and yes, there's so much going on out there that we are waking up to what they're doing to our foods, what they're doing to our water. But, and I shouldn't say they, this is stuff that's happening, but there's a transparency that's happening. What I tell people is it's not about fighting fear with fear. That doesn't work. One side's going to push and the other side's going to push back. What is happening worldwide is we are waking up one by one by one, and we're waking up into these higher vibrational states that gives us more clarity, gives us greater consciousness. That comes back to the pineal gland again. And when you're in these higher vibrational states, a disease can't sustain. So if you're hanging out in a lot of love-based emotions, love, joy, gratitude, compassion, that creates a different response, a different vibration, a higher vibration. It raises the body up into a higher vibrating state, vibrancy. And again, disease can't sustain in that. And that's what we're heading towards. So it comes down to what kind of response am I going to have? That's why I love that group that was saying, okay, no blame. This is what has happened. No blame, no anger. Let's just move forward with what do we need to be doing. And it's the same thing. If I can have sometimes you feel the need to take action, but take action not from an angry mind. That's going to be a different response than something that's more driven from the soul, driven from the heart. Do you see it's a different response?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of people out there. I've read a lot of books on holistic religion in general. And one of the things that always comes through as a theme to me is that when you hear the truth, like a real truth, you can actually feel it in a different way. Just the way good music resonates with some people in a different way than bad music. Hearing the truth resonates in a deeper part of your body, or I would say your heart, than non-truth. So, I mean, there is a distinct physical feeling that's different, in my opinion, Robbie.
I totally agree with you. You can feel, and truth resonates. That's why I think this book has done so well worldwide, is because it resonates with people. It resonates as truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening out there, but we're waking up to what's going on. And that stuff's coming to the surface with social media and awareness now. People are becoming more aware of what's really been going on, especially with our food system. And so it resonates as truth to them, and they move forward with that. And you know, if you do a gut check, you know in 3 seconds whether it feels right or it doesn't feel right. Remember I started this program with, does it feel good?
That's right.
Does it feel right? And that 3-second gut check tells you intuitively, that's your guidance system. After that 3 seconds, now the mind has chimed in. That's a different story. So it's that first initial thought that's instantaneous. That's coming from a higher consciousness. It's that second and third thought, but now it's the mind again who's chimed in. Thanks for sharing, but I don't think so.
Right.
So it's following that intuition, following the truth, and that is what's changing the planet. That's why I have a lot of hope for the planet, because I think people are waking up. If you look at who's coming in, oh my gosh, these kids are so different. They're already coming in awake. Coming in at a higher vibration. And what's happening is, and this is scientifically proven, right now we have a clear shot to the center of the Milky Way galaxy. So that means scientifically that we are getting the highest rates of electromagnetic energy. It's like trying to grow vegetables in the middle of summer, perfect time. And what this means for us is that it's hitting us with these really high vibrations, which is raising us in these higher vibrations. And if you're not moving into these higher vibrational states, it's very uncomfortable. So if you're hanging out in this depression, you know, anger, resentment, greed, that's a low vibrational state. That's thinking about yourself. Whereas the Aboriginal people, they're hanging out in these higher vibrational states where they're being of service, they're being in love, they're operating out of wanting to help each other. That's where we're headed, and that's what these vibrational states are helping us move into. So they can do what they want, but that's going to activate that pineal gland. And so what we want to keep doing is moving forward in love-based emotions, love-based thoughts, when we can, as we can. And that's what's going to change the planet. It's going to change you first, and then it's going to change each other.
Oh, man. Hitting it on the head, Robbie. Change you first, and then we can do the family, and then we can do the communities, and all of a sudden we're an interconnected nation of communities that everybody is caring about one another. What a world that would be, Robbie.
Right, and here's another one. You're going to love this one, JD. Are you familiar with the 100 monkey theory?
Are we talking about on the island of Tahiti?
Wow, are you good?
I read a lot. I read a lot, but please go ahead and express that, because I do.
Okay.
I do know about it, and it is very interesting.
It is interesting, and it does affect us. There was a monkey. It was a female monkey on this island who started doing something different with her food. Do you remember? Was it she was washing it or accessing it differently?
She was washing it, yeah. So the story has to do with the fact that we decided to test all of our nuclear weapons on Tahiti, in paradise. That's where, you know, obviously that's the best place in the world to go up and blow up all of our nuclear weapons. But we had started to put monkeys back out there to see whether or not they could survive, to see whether or not the radiation would affect them. And it turned out that the coconuts on the island were actually radioactive, and a number of these monkeys would eat the coconuts and then die, until one coconut, apparently, or one person showed a monkey that they needed to wash the coconuts first. And that's, I think, you want to pick it up there?
Sure. So this female monkey started washing the coconut, and then the other monkeys watching her started doing the same thing. Now, when they got to 100 monkeys, they discovered that other monkeys on other parts of the world just had access to that and were doing the same thing. It was part of their consciousness.
That's right. And the 100 monkey number is important because there were 1,000 monkeys total. So we're talking about a 10% shift here.
Exactly. So that was enough to shift things. It was enough to bring it into this consciousness, this grid that I talked about that we're all connected to whether we know it or not. So they became part of the consciousness. Now what's happening on the planet, this is why I'm so excited about the future, is there are enough of us coming here deliberately, enough of us raising up into that awakening state, into that higher vibrational state of love and compassion and awake, that it's creating that tipping point with others on the planet.
That's right.
That's why it's so important that when you listen to what they're doing to the food or whatever, that you start paying attention to, God, can I feel what's going on in my body? It feels bad and my body constricts. That's what I'm talking about. It's going to create dis-ease if you go down that road long enough. So you want to shift it over into, what we're waking up. It's like we're maturing. We're waking up, shifted over into a more loving response, a more healthy emotion for you and for everybody around you. And that, Dr. David Hawking's Power versus Force, and you probably have read this one too, JB.
I have, yes, ma'am.
he talked about how one person who's hanging out in non-judgmental energy is negating and offsetting the lower vibrations of, like, I don't know, 50,000 people. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's a powerful – Dr. Wayne Dyer wrote an article about it, and it's up on my website, I believe, or they can contact me if they want it. But it's fabulous, and it shows you how by hanging out in these more loving states, compassion, non-judgment – it's offsetting and releasing these lower vibrational states of people. So if you want to be of service, if you want to help this planet, hang out in joy, hang out in gratitude, have a vision of the planet being healed, everybody waking up and moving into states of joy, and moving into states of service and love. That, again, that's quantum physics right there.
Yes, I'm so glad. I'm so glad you brought up quantum physics again too, because I've been dying to kind of try and bridge this gap. You know, one of the things that quantum physics is showing us is that there is a force in the universe that we do not understand. And the best example that I can talk about, or the best qualifying word that I could use, I think would be intention. That we can see in science that there is the intention of activity that is either moving towards or moving away from balance, right? So there is some sort of unknown force out there moving everybody towards balance on a molecular level. And that intention is coming from somewhere. And I kind of wanted to get your feeling on if you felt like that intention was real, first of all, and how that intention plays into the intuition aspect of what I would classify as kind of these indigo children that are coming to light now.
Mm. Wow, you got great questions. Well, I absolutely, the intention is real. I mean, you can call it a universal law of attraction, but mm-hmm. what you're thinking about is so important.
It's love.
It's coming to you.
Yeah.
It's a law. Right, just like gravity. It works whether you believe it or not. It's
that's right.
There. So that's why I think, and that's what I love that Secrets of Aboriginal Healing talks about. The Aboriginals, one of their steps is like focus. Wow, you really need to focus on what you want, not what you don't want. And where most people get into trouble is they spend a lot of time focusing on their pain.
That's
right.
A
lot of time focusing on their disease, and that's, or a lot of time focusing on a world that's not, that's just
all the bad things that might happen. You focus on all the bad things that could happen.
Exactly, and that's what we're bringing to us.
That's
and
right.
We're adding energy to that, and it really comes down to what are you adding energy to? What are you building your energy towards? Which is another reason why it's a great idea, and I meditate now every day. It's sort of like when you meditate, it lifts the needle for those of us old enough to remember the records, and we had the little needle going
yeah.
around. When you lift that needle from the mind for a little bit, it takes away its power, so you can come back to feeling what's going on inside rather than this mind endlessly automatically taking you places you don't want to go. So lift the needle of the mind every now and then with a 5-minute meditation, a 10-minute meditation, where that means where you just simply get quiet.
That's right.
Quiet that mind deliberately so you can feel that guidance within, because everything you need to know is within you, including how to heal yourself. All that information is there. You know intuitively whether this feels right or it doesn't. Always follow that intuition, no
Absolutely.
Matter who's telling you what.
Man, this is so great, Robbie. I really can't tell you how much fun I'm having this conversation with you. I have got to go to a phone call, though, because if I don't, we've got a caller named Fran who is absolutely out of sight, one of the best listeners we've ever had on the program, and she calls pretty often, and I know she's been waiting on the phone to hear from you. So I'm going to put my questions aside, if that's okay with you, and let's go to
sure.
the phone line here real quick. Fran, thank you so much for being so patient. I really appreciate you calling in today. You want to go ahead with a question or comment for Robbie Holes, please?
Oh, yeah. And by the way, J.D., I am totally floored and humbled and having a couple shades of red going up my face now.
Yes.
Anyway.
Mission accomplished.
There you go. Hello to both you folks to start with. My dear, let me tell you something. You have nailed so many different things I've heard you talk about to start with. And when it comes to the prospect of energy that's negative thought and so forth and so on ad nauseum, one thought you may want to consider is the fact that a lot of that may be intentional by who knows who in various agency structures to actually behave as psychic vampires to help st- start sucking off that negative energy that people are thinking as far as their negative thoughts are concerned for their own selfish purpose, for that matter. So as a result, when they start shielding themselves, or basically whenever they have a negative thought, just simply thinking in reverse that, okay, all that energy that I just thought of that was negative, let it be negated or neutralized so I can use it for a positive and healing purpose only. And does cut the bloom and sucker off right at their mouth or whatever.
Thank you, Fran. That's good. That's good. Well, let me take that a step farther. I think that's great. But here's what I would say. I don't give any energy to that stuff because I don't need it at all. There's that quote, Mother Teresa would never go to an anti-war rally, but only pro-peace, because she didn't want to give any energy to the war. And I don't go near any of the darkness. I know there's a lot of it out there. In fact, they'll tell you that right now is like high noon on the planet. The darkness is the darkest, and the light is the brightest. And the light always overcomes the dark. And what's happening is we're shifting into these higher vibrational states, and it's really uncomfortable for this darkness. And it's leaving, but it's putting up quite a tantrum as it leaves. But I don't give it any energy, and I don't even go there. And I don't have a problem with it because it doesn't come into my life because I don't focus on it. But yeah,
well,
I'll
tell you one thing. I'm just hearing that. Yeah, I'm tingling just from hearing that comment. So I would have to agree with you,
Fran. I got to tell you, Fran, you absolutely have to go.
Good, we got the tingle response.
You got to go get these books, Fran. You of all people will absolutely love these. And I'll tell you, if you buy them and you don't like them, I will buy them back from you because that's how much I believe in these books. And you, Fran, I'm telling you, you will totally get a kick, especially the Secrets of the Aboriginal Healing. I wasn't kidding when I said I had 3 or 4 full body tingle moments when I was reading this book. Like really, when Gary shows up at the tribe and they say, hey, what took you so long? We've been expecting you for 4 months. I mean, we're talking, that's Journey to Ixalan. That's Carlos Castaneda. These guys are shamans. I mean, essentially, right at that point, I was hooked since right then, you know.
Yeah. So, well, you know, there's a reason why that happens, maybe, is the fact that they are looking at your heart center, and they know your heart before you ever get there.
That is profound. That is profound.
Yeah, exactly. I think they're living in these higher vibrational states. I mean, if you want to talk about it, we're living in a third dimensional existence, and we're shifting into fifth. At fourth, yes, briefly, but we're shifting into fifth. And I think that the remote Aboriginals are already hanging out in the fifth. They have been for a long time. So that's what I want to know is what wisdom do they have if they're already in this higher state? How are they living? How are they healing? What's the wisdom that they have to give us that they have been? I mean, look at all the wisdom you gain from one lifetime. Can you imagine the wisdom of over 60,000 years old?
Especially if you're that connected to nature and stuff.
Right, and that's a great point, JD, that they have always stayed connected to nature.
Yes.
Like these other indigenous cultures. And that's where we got into trouble. They'll tell you that when we started speaking, we were telepathic. And when we started speaking out loud, that, which they think is very primitive, and chaotic to be speaking out loud. But when we did that, we lost that connection. We couldn't hear the trees singing to us. We couldn't hear the mountains, talking back and forth. And all the indigenous cultures around the world will tell you that because they've maintained that connection. So we've lost that. What a grand experiment. And now we're going back to getting that connection again. How fabulous that this is the day after Earth Day. Come back to becoming aware of that Earth loves you ridiculously. We don't have a clue how much she loves and supports us. And so you start having that awareness, and that changes the way you respond to the planet.
I have to wonder too of how much of their gifts that they're getting over there have a result from them being barefoot all the time. We talk a lot on the show about grounding and, you know, staring into the sun.
Now you're nailing it.
When it's safely acceptable and safe to do. But I would wonder if just being alive in their environment has a significant effect on them as well.
Absolutely. And
but
the biggest thing, I think, is Jan or Fran, are you getting the I don't know, you get goosebumps or something? Is that what's telling you this is right on?
Oh, yes, because I know when the weather gets such that I can do so, I will literally walk out in the grass barefoot and just let that flow go through back and forth as need be, because you're balancing your electromagnetic system with that.
Beautiful. And the Aboriginal people will tell you it's because you are one. with it. We've separated it in our minds, but you can feel a rainstorm coming because you are the rain. You are all one. We're all connected. And I never thought about that before, JD, about how being barefoot helps ground you. But the other thing is, and being constantly, because when you're in these elements, your vibration is raised up, and then you get that clarity, and you're hanging out in these higher states of consciousness and awareness. The other thing is, they don't have the distractions of the mind. They spend more than half of their time in dream time, and they start doing that about the age of 3 or 4, which means that they disconnect and unplug from the mind and connect into this greater consciousness, where look at us. I have people who tell me they don't have 10 minutes to meditate, and I love that my friend says, if you think you don't have 10 minutes to meditate, you need to go sit in the corner for an hour.
That's right. And if you're really busy, you got to spend at least an hour doing it. I want to talk to you, too, about isolation chambers. Have you had any experience with these? Because I am dying to go do a float someplace, because that, to me, you know, the whole goal with meditation is you're trying to eliminate from your brain all of your sensory input, which is why people can't sleep at night, because you spend all day being bombarded with every sense all the time, and then all of a sudden you try and go to bed and your body's like, oh, what's going on? We're left alone. So I also, you know, so when you're meditating, you're trying to basically eliminate all of those impulses. But if you could get into an isolation chamber like Joe Rogan talks about, where your body temperature and the air temperature and everything fits and you're just floating there in space kind of like a womb, I wonder if you tried that or if you would recommend something like that, Robbie.
Oh, well, honestly, that freaks me out.
Does it, the claustrophobia aspect?
I am so claustrophobic, yeah. Right. I don't know where that came from or what that's about. But that's a great point, though. But here's something even simpler that people can do. Close your eyes. When you close your eyes, it cuts off a lot of this outside stimulation, because most of us are so outward-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just simply close your eyes and pay attention to, what do I smell? What do I feel? Can I feel my socks against my legs? Can I feel that slight breeze? What am I smelling? Getting back into that present moment, the senses, rather than letting that mind unconsciously take you off on its little rampages, take you off, getting back to the present moment. That's a powerful state to be.
Wow, that's really interesting, because I was thinking more along the lines of trying to get out of the present and get back into the universal flow, but you're saying just basically focusing on everything that's going on in terms of your sensory input can be a successful way to meditate.
Well, what you're trying to do, what you want to do is to get back inside. Have some awareness of what's going on inside. Most of us are so outward oriented that it's like I was able to almost die, kill myself twice because I was so numb to what was going on inside. I couldn't feel my body was so exhausted. I couldn't feel how, you know, it's like have a little bit of an awareness throughout the day of what's going on inside. That's where your guidance is. That's your intuition. That's also telling you, does this feel good or not? And do I feel constricted or not?
Well, and it keeps you grounded in the moment, too. I mean, that's got to be the biggest thing for that.
Absolutely, because when you're going off into the past or future, that's the mind then. That's the mind again. So, but most of us are so on autopilot, we don't know what's going on. And I had an incident a couple weeks ago where I sat down at the end of the day and I was feeling a little anxious about, overwhelmed about what was on my desk and on my plate. And when I sat down and checked in, I could feel this angst. And that's when, otherwise it had been running all day long. And that's the stuff that creates disease if it goes unchecked. So I was aware of it, and I was aware that my mind was creating it, and I don't think so. I'm going to let it go. And I just let it go. And that may sound easier than it, but it is that simple. It's the mind that's going to keep saying, oh, it's going to be hard. It's going to be, go to the end result and see what you want. And
well,
just
remember the fact that mind. The root of disbelief exists in the mind as well. You have a control over whether or not you believe that something is going to be effective at the same time.
Absolutely. The mind is just the key. It's the biggest part of this. It's the biggest part of your healing. It's the biggest part of everything. It's that mind. And what we're doing is we're waking up to its little tricks, its negativity, and we're just reshifting it back into what we want, to actively create what we want, and focusing on what we want, and being aware of what's running in the background that we're not aware of.
I just love it. I want to get on to the subject of your consultations, because I know you do that. Fran, is there anything else you'd like to add today?
Yeah, just one quick thought for you both and for whoever may be listening. When it comes to the point of trying to make time to actually meditate or turn inward to listen to yourself and your heart or whatever, if it could be just as simple as setting a timer for like maybe 5 minutes at the least, and setting that time aside, and then just simply turn your attention to your breath or your heart center inward. That will be the that will be the longest 5 minutes you'll ever sit there turning inward to listen, and yet it's gone in like a split second.
Wow.
So have a great one.
Thank you very much, Fran.
Yeah,
I appreciate
that.
That
was great, Fran. Thanks.
We'll see you later, Fran. Thanks again. Okay, I want to talk a little bit, if you would, about your current consultations, if people can call you and how they can get involved. And also, what's the most common thing that people kind of bring to your plate to ask for help from?
Well, you know, I help with body, mind, spirit. I help with people understand what the emotional core is and help them recognize it and when release it. And then I also help them get that mind on board, assisting and helping them recognize where they've been sabotaging and really bringing in a higher consciousness to assist. I love doing it. I keep telling people, just give me 1 hour. Just give me 1 hour. I will change your life. Because my intention, and Gary's and the Aboriginals, is to give you the information so that you know how to do it yourself.
Uh-huh.
It's about empowering you. And so once you have an awareness, and that 1 hour is, it's huge. So that's, I love doing it. It's amazingly transformational. But we also have other things available on the website for people. Our passion is to get people to understand how to heal, where they've been blocking the healing, because your body wants to heal. It's a powerful healer. You cut yourself, you have a bruise, it just naturally wants to heal it, and it does. So people need to understand where they've been blocking that healing. So we have an online course that we made really easy and accessible but effective. That integrates. It's great to read the book. That, yes, the information is all in there, but now take it further and integrate it. So that's up there on my Holes Wellness website. There's a lot of information that we put up there to help people, especially on the blog section.
Mm-hmm. I say the books, too, are key because they get you all fired up. I mean, I read this, and I'm thinking, I'm going to Australia. You know what I mean? I'm serious.
I know, and they're really quick reads because you can't put them down. That's what people keep telling me.
That's right.
So, yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah,
well,
it's great.
This has just been an absolutely outstanding morning, Robbie. I really cannot thank you enough for taking some time out of your schedule. The chat room has just gone absolutely crazy with this information, and I know that people are going to go out and purchase these books because they are just that good. I just want to thank you again for taking the time out of your schedule to come join us today. You are welcome back at any point in the future when you have time. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, JD.
Absolutely. That was Robbie Holes, ladies and gentlemen, and I really do recommend you guys check out holeswellness.com. I would buy these books. I would buy them again, and if you buy them and don't like them, I'll buy them from you. That's how much I like these books, and I think that this is going to make a significant impact in a lot of people's lives. So anyway, that was the show for the day. I appreciate you guys all being here with us today. I would hang on to Truth Frequency Radio for the wonderful Roger Sales Show coming up just next, and also stay tuned all day. I mean, there's so many good stuff. Robert Bruce's show, you got Kev Baker later on tonight. Oh man, Joe Joseph or Popeye will be on later today. Just great stuff. Really appreciate all of you guys being here today, and we will see you guys in the morning. You guys take care, everybody. Good luck and Godspeed out there. See you guys tomorrow.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.